Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Today we're diving into a work that, despite its ancient roots, speaks to us with surprising immediacy. This is a guide to horse care and training that could have been written today, yet hails from well over 2,000 years ago. We're talking about a modernized take on Xenophon's Guide to Horsemanship. This isn't just for the equestrians among us, but for anyone who's ever been captivated by the depth of history and the enduring connections between humans and animals. Through the lens of today's language, we've revitalized Xenophon's work while respecting the essence of his writing. It's pretty wild how little horse care good practice has changed over the millennia. If you are as passionate about bringing the treasures of the past into the light of the present, consider joining our journey on Patreon. Your support helps us uncover and share more of these timeless stories with a modern twist. Now, let's delve into this ancient wisdom together and discover what it still teaches us about our lives today. On Horsemanship, by Xenophon of Athens. Having spent quite a bit of time in the saddle myself, I've picked up a thing or two about horses. So, I want to share some wisdom with the younger generation on how to handle these magnificent creatures the right way. It's worth mentioning that there's already a guide out there by Simon, who's got his own bronze horse statue in Athens, complete with a detailed engraving of his horse handling skills. But just because Simon covered some of the same ground doesn't mean I'm going to skip over those parts. If anything, it's cool to think that we've arrived at some of the same conclusions. And for anything Simon might have missed, I'm here to fill in the gaps. First things first, let's talk about how not to end up with a dud when you're horse shopping. Imagine you're looking at a young horse that hasn't been trained yet. Obviously, you can't judge its spirit or temperament straight away, so you start with the basics, the body, and the first thing to check, the hooves. It's like making sure the foundation of a house is solid before you fall in love with the interior design. No matter how impressive a horse looks, if its hooves aren't in good shape, especially for a war horse, it's pretty much a no-go. A horse with bad feet won't be able to show off any of its other qualities. When you're inspecting the hooves, the thickness of the horn is a big deal. A thick one is a sign of a healthy foot. Also, take a look at whether the hooves are high or flat. High hooves mean that the frog, that's part of the foot, stays clear of the ground, which is what you want. Flat hooves, on the other hand, put too much pressure on both the tough and tender parts of the foot, kind of like how it's uncomfortable to walk if you're bandy-legged. Simon nailed it when he said, "You can tell a good foot by its ring." A solid hoof hitting the ground should sound crisp, almost musical. Moving up from the hooves, let's take a closer look at the horse's legs. The bones just above the hoof, right before the joint of the leg, we're talking about the pastons here, shouldn't be too stiff and straight like a goat's legs. If they are, they'll make for a rough ride and could get inflamed from the lack of give. But you also don't want them too low to the ground, or they'll get scraped up when your horse kicks up dirt or hits stones. Now, about the bones in the lower leg, the ones that are like the main pillars holding up the horse's body, they need to be solid, not just puffed up with veins or covered in too much flesh. If they're not solid, they'll swell up when you're out on a hard ride, and nobody wants to deal with swollen varicose veins on a horse. If those legs get puffy, the skin will start to pull away, and the tendons might just snap, leaving your horse lame. When you see a young horse walking around bending its knees nicely, that's a good sign. It means as it gets older and starts getting ridden, those legs are going to stay supple. Horses with flexible knees are less likely to trip or get worn out fast. Plus, they just look better. Looking at the upper legs, right below where the shoulders would be if horses had them like we do, you want to see some good muscle. It's the same with people. A strong muscular build just looks better. And a broad chest? That's not just more attractive. It means the horse can spread its legs without tripping over itself. The neck should stand up proud, not droop down like a boar's. Think of a rooster's stance, upright and commanding. This setup not only looks majestic, but also keeps the horse's head and eyes up, so it's easier to see where it's going. And a horse built like this, even if it's full of energy, won't easily get the better of its rider. Horses assert themselves by stretching out their neck and head, not by arching back. Checking the jaws for softness or hardness is crucial because often, a horse with uneven sensitivity in its jaws can end up being hard-mouthed on one side. You want that perfect balance to ensure smooth handling. Eyes that are more prominent rather than sunken hint at a horse's alertness and broader vision, both key for a horse that's responsive and aware of its surroundings. Nostrils that flare out widely are not only a sign of better breathing capacity, but also lend a horse a more spirited look. Just watch how a horse's nostrils flare when it's pumped up or challenged. It's a clear sign of its fiery spirit. A horse with a pronounced crest and smaller ears just looks more noble, embodying that quintessential equine grace. High withers are more than just aesthetically pleasing. They provide you with a more secure seat, ensuring better cohesion between you and the horse. A double spine, or a broader back, not only makes for a more comfortable ride, but also is more visually appealing. A horse with sides that gently curve towards the belly will likely be stronger, easier to ride, and better at digesting its food. Short broad loins are your friend. They make it easier for the horse to lift its front end and tuck its hindquarters beneath itself, making for a compact, powerful frame. Plus, a smaller belly, aside from looking better, suggests a horse that's stronger and more adept at carrying weight. The hindquarters should match the robustness of the chest and sides, being broad, muscular, and firm. This build contributes to agility and speed, essential for any horse meant to excel on the track or in the field. And about the thighs and buttocks, having a clear divide there means the horse can plant its hind legs well apart. This stance is not only more impressive, but provides a stable base, making the horse's movements more graceful and powerful. Just like people, who spread their legs apart to lift something heavy off the ground, a horse's strength and stability come from having the ability to properly space its legs. This isn't just about power, it's about balance and the natural mechanics of both human and equine bodies. Interestingly, when it comes to a horse's physique, large testicles aren't something you'd specifically look for, especially not in a colt. It's one of those things that doesn't really come into play when assessing a horse's potential. As for the lower parts of a horse, like the hocks, shins, fetlocks and hooves, what we've discussed regarding the front legs pretty much applies to the back legs too. The essentials of good hoof care, the right bone structure, and the signs of a healthy leg don't change much from front to back. When trying to predict how large a horse will grow, a key indicator is the length of the colt's legs at birth. It turns out, and this is true for most domestic animals, that while the legs don't grow much after a certain point, the rest of the body will continue to grow into them, achieving the animal's mature form and size. So, if you're looking at a colt, paying attention to the leg length can give you a good clue about its eventual size. And though it might happen that a colt's appearance changes as it grows, more often than not, a colt that starts off looking strong and well-formed will grow into a fine, robust horse. It's actually rarer for a good-looking foal to end up looking poor or having defects than for an awkward colt to become a capable adult horse. Talking about how to break in a colt isn't really something I need to dive into. Generally, those who end up with cavalry duties are pretty well off and play significant roles in the state's affairs. It makes more sense for a young guy to focus on getting fit and improving his riding skills or mastering cavalry manoeuvres if he already knows the basics, rather than trying to become a horse trainer. And for the older folks, they've got their city lives, their social circles, and a ton of responsibilities, be it related to politics or warfare. They've got better things to do than horse breaking. So, if you're on the same page as me, you'll likely send your young horse to a pro to get trained. But when you do that, make sure you lay out exactly what you expect the horse to learn, kind of like how a dad lays out expectations when he sends his son to learn a trade. This way, the trainer knows what to focus on to earn his pay. On your end, you should ensure the colt is easy to handle, friendly, and has a soft spot for humans by the time it goes to the trainer. A lot of this can be managed by the groom if he's smart about linking the horse's basic needs and comforts to human presence. For example, making sure the colt realizes being alone means dealing with hunger, thirst, and pests, but being with humans means getting food, drink, and relief from annoyances. With this approach, the colt won't just like being around people, it'll seek out human company. Plus, regular gentle touches and pats on the spots they enjoy being touched can work wonders. Make sure to get the colt used to crowds, different sights and sounds, and if anything spooks him, show him there's nothing to fear, but always with kindness, not force. With these guidelines, I believe anyone looking to break in a horse on their own will find what they need to get started. When you're out to buy a horse that's already trained for riding, there are a few key things to keep in mind to avoid getting duped. First off, you've got to be sure about the horse's age. If it's past its prime and lost its baby teeth, you're not just losing out on potential, you might be stuck with a horse that's more of a burden than a joy. Once you've confirmed the horse is young enough, check how it reacts to the bit and bridle. It's a simple test. Watch how the horse takes the bit, and if it's cool with someone handling its head and ears, then see how it behaves when someone tries to mount it. Some horses really don't like the idea of carrying a rider, seeing it as just more work to do. Another thing to watch for is if the horse is too clingy with other horses. Does it freak out and try to run back to its buddies the moment you try riding it away? Or does it bolt towards a group of horses when you pass by? Some poorly trained horses even make a beeline for the stable instead of working out with you. A good test of its training and temperament is to do some tight turns and changes in direction. This can show you if the horse is hard to control. Also, you should check if the horse can stop on a dime when it's running full tilt, and if it responds well to commands to turn. It's crucial, especially if you're thinking of using the horse in any demanding situations. Just like with people, a horse that doesn't listen is a big problem. Imagine how frustrating it is when your servants or even troops don't do what you want. A horse that won't follow orders is more than just annoying. It can be downright dangerous. Considering you might want a horse for more action-packed scenarios, you've got to put it through the ringer. Have it jump over stuff, climb and descend steep slopes, and handle all sorts of terrain. These exercises test not just its physical shape, but also its courage and willingness to face challenges. Now, I'm not saying to pass on a horse just because it doesn't ace every single test. Some might not get everything right off the bat, not due to lack of skill, but simply because they're not used to it. With the right training and a bit of patience, most horses will get there, as long as they're healthy and not naturally scaredy cats. You definitely don't want a horse that's too jittery. It's risky for both you and the horse in tense situations. Also, keep an eye out for any mean streaks towards people or other horses, or if it gets easily spooked. These traits can make your life harder. To really get a sense of how the horse handles the basics like being bitted or mounted, try doing all that again after a workout. A horse that's still cooperative after putting in some work is showing good spirit and stamina. To sum it up, if the horse is sound, easy to handle, quick enough, can take on a bit of hard work, and most importantly listens to you, then you've probably found a good match. On the flip side, a horse that's either too lazy or too wild to easily control is going to be a handful, especially when things get tough. After finding and bringing home a horse you admire, the next question is, how should he be housed? Ideally, the stable should be located where you can easily keep an eye on him. It's just as important to secure his food from theft as it is to protect your own pantry. Overlooking this could be self-defeating, especially when you rely on your horse in critical situations. A secure stable does more than protect the horse's food. It helps you notice if the horse scatters its feed, a potential sign of health issues ranging from excessive blood, which needs veterinary attention, to fatigue requiring rest, or even the onset of indigestion or other illnesses. Like with people, catching horse diseases early makes them easier to manage. But a horse's care isn't just about food and exercise. Foot care is crucial. A damp or slick stable floor can ruin even the healthiest hooves. To prevent this, the floor should slope for drainage and be paved with stones that match the horse's hoof size, creating a surface that naturally strengthens the hooves through standing. Additionally, the groom should lead the horse out for grooming and ensure it's unhaltered after its morning meal to increase its appetite for the evening. For an ideal stable yard that further strengthens the horse's feet, consider adding a layer of hand-sized pebbles, about a pound in weight each, surrounded by an iron fence to keep them in place. This environment mimics walking on a rocky path, promoting hoof and frog strength even when the horse is just shifting around. Hardening the hooves is necessary, but don't forget to soften the mouth and jaws for responsiveness. The same treatments that soften human skin, like bathing, friction, and oil, can also be applied to a horse's mouth. As a horse owner, it's key to make sure your groom knows his stuff when it comes to taking care of your horse. First off, the halter shouldn't be knotted where it connects to the head. If it's too tight, the horse might rub against the manger and get sores around its ears, which is a surefire way to make any horse cranky, especially when you're trying to put the bit in or groom it. The groom should also regularly clean out the horse's stall. It's easier for him and better for the horse if all the waste goes to the same spot each day. Whenever the horse is taken out, like for grooming or just to roll around, it should have a muzzle on if it's not wearing its bit. The muzzle stops the horse from biting without messing with its breathing, which means less chance for mischief. When tying up the horse, the halter should go above its head. Horses naturally throw their heads up when annoyed by something on their face. Tying them this way means they'll loosen the halter instead of breaking it. Start grooming with the head and mane because there's no point in cleaning the lower parts if the top is still dirty. Use all the regular grooming tools, but avoid harsh tools on the horse's back where the rider sits. Just use your hands to avoid any damage. The head and forelocks should just get a simple water rinse since they're mostly bone, and you don't want to cause any harm. Those long forelock hairs help keep stuff out of the horse's eyes, kind of like the ears do for a donkey or mule. The tail and mane need a good wash to help the hair grow, making the tail better at swatting away bugs and giving the rider something good to hold on to. These parts, the mane, forelock, and tail, are pretty much the horse's pride and joy, gifts from the gods for looks and functionality. For example, a female horse won't easily let a donkey near if her mane isn't trimmed, something mule breeders keep in mind. As for washing the horse's legs, it might be best to skip it. Daily washes can actually do more harm than good to the hooves, and overcleaning the belly isn't great either. It bothers the horse, attracts bugs, and they'll just end up dirty again once you take them out. So, for the legs and belly, a good rub down is all you really need. When it comes to grooming your horse, doing it safely for both you and the horse is key. If a groom tries to clean the horse facing the same way as the horse, there's a risk of getting hit by the horse's knee or hoof. The trick is to face the opposite direction, stand clear of the horse's legs, and start cleaning from a safe angle to the shoulder. It's also smarter to approach the horse from the side rather than directly from the front or back. This way, if the horse decides to act up, you're in a safer position and have more control. When leading the horse, don't walk in front of it because you lose your protective stance, giving the horse too much freedom. Also, avoid letting the horse walk ahead on a long rein. It's risky because the horse can easily start acting out. The safest way is to lead from the side, keeping you in control and ready to mount quickly if needed. Putting the bit in the horse's mouth should be straightforward. Approach from the horse's left side, drape the reins over its head, and gently offer the bit. If the horse resists, a gentle thumb inside the jaws or slight pressure against the teeth usually convinces it to accept the bit. This makes the horse more willing to take the bit over time, especially if it associates the bit with positive experiences like feeding or returning from a ride. Knowing how to help someone mount the horse, like the Persian method, is useful, especially if the rider is injured or not as mobile. It's a nice touch for assisting both yourself and others. Remember, never approach your horse in anger. If the horse is nervous about something, show it there's nothing to fear by touching the object yourself. Forcing the horse only makes it more scared. If the groom can help the horse lower its back for easier mounting, that's great. But a good rider should practice how to mount without assistance, just in case you're dealing with a different horse or don't have a helper at hand. Once you've got your new horse and are all set to get going, here are some tips to make mounting up safe for you and comfortable for your horse. First things first, grab the lead rein lightly in your left hand without pulling on the horse's mouth, no matter how you're getting on, whether by pulling yourself up by the mane or vaulting on with a spear. Use your right hand to hold onto the reins and a bit of mane near the shoulder so you don't accidentally yank on the horse's mouth while hopping on. When you jump up, push off with your left hand and reach up with your right, keeping your leg out of the way so you don't knee the horse on the way over. If you're leading your horse with your left hand and holding a spear in your right, it's a good move to practice mounting from the right side too. It's pretty much the same drill, just switch sides. This skill means you're ready to hop on and get going quickly, no matter the situation. Once you're up, whether bareback or on a saddle, think of standing rather than sitting. This stance helps you grip better with your thighs, stay balanced, and makes it easier to throw a spear or punch if needed. Your legs should be relaxed below the knees. Stiff legs are more likely to get injured. Keeping your upper body flexible means you can reach further and stay on during a surprise move. Before anything else, make sure your horse stands still until you're all set with your gear and have the reins even. Keep your arm close to your side for better balance and control. For the reins, go for something sturdy yet easy to hold so you can grab your spear without fumbling. Start off at a walk to keep the horse calm. If the horse's head is low, lift the reins a bit. If it's high, lower them to show off its best posture. When you move into a trot and then a gallop, it'll help the horse loosen up without strain. Timing the transition to a gallop when the horse steps with its right foot makes for a smoother start. Practicing turns, like the Volta, gets the horse comfortable going both ways. We prefer an oval track over a circle, since it keeps the horse eager to turn after going straight for a while. Slow down at turns, especially if the ground's tricky, to prevent falls. Avoid pulling the horse around with the bit, or leaning too much yourself when collecting after a turn. A little goes a long way, and you don't want to end up on the ground. Speed up after a turn, mimicking how you'd move in battle. When you've had a good session, give the horse a break, then practice sudden starts and stops and quick turns, skills you'll thank yourself for mastering later. When it's time to dismount, do it away from other horses or people, and especially not outside your training area. Let the horse relax in the same place where it worked hard. This routine helps the horse associate hard work with well-deserved rest and praise, making your training sessions something it looks forward to. So you've got your horse, and now it's time to really start working together. You'll find yourself needing to navigate all sorts of terrains and challenges, from racing down slopes to leaping over ditches. It's crucial for both your safety and the horse's that you both know how to handle these situations. This chapter is all about getting you and your horse ready for anything. First off, if you think you've heard some of this before, you're not wrong, but there's a difference. Earlier, we talked about checking if a horse can handle certain actions before you buy. Now we're focusing on training your horse to perform these actions confidently. For a horse that's new to jumping, start with leading him by the rein to the obstacle, then cross over yourself and encourage him to follow. If he hesitates, a little encouragement from behind might be necessary. Once he gets the hang of it, he'll leap over with just the sight of someone behind him as a prompt. You can then progress to riding him over obstacles, using a spur at the right moment to boost his confidence and ensure a clean leap. When it comes to slopes, start on the gentler ones and work your way up. You'll find horses actually prefer going downhill for a quick pace, despite some fears that it might hurt them. Fun fact, Persians and Odrysians race their horses down steep slopes without issue, proving it's totally doable. As the rider, your job is to adapt to your horse's movements. Lean forward when galloping, lean back when stopping quickly, and let go of the reins when jumping, so you're not pulling at your horse's mouth unnecessarily. If you're heading downhill, lean back and keep a tight hold on the reins for both your sakes. Mix up your training spots and routines to keep your horse engaged and not bored with the same old thing. For those looking to really master riding at full speed and using weapons on horseback, there's no better practice than the thrill of the hunt, or, lacking wild animals, teaming up with another rider. One acts as the fleeing target, darting over all kinds of terrain with a lance ready to use defensively. The pursuer tries to tag the enemy with blunted javelins or a lance, practicing both long-range and close-up moves. Getting close? Try pulling your opponent towards you, then pushing them away suddenly. It's a neat trick to throw them off balance. If you are the one being pulled, the best move is to lean into it, which might throw the other guy off instead. When you're facing an enemy's camp during a skirmish, charging towards the enemy lines and then pulling back, it's crucial to remember your positioning. When you're close to your own side, it's both brave and smart to charge aggressively, but as soon as you're near the enemy, control becomes key. This approach maximizes your impact while keeping you safe. It's about striking hard when you can and pulling back smartly to minimize your own risk. Remember, your horse can't understand your words, but he definitely gets the concept of cause and effect. Reward him when he follows through, and be firm when he doesn't. It's a simple approach, but it's the foundation of effective horse training. Teach your horse to associate following commands with positive outcomes, and you'll both be set for whatever adventure comes your way. Now that we've covered the basics of buying, caring for, and training your horse, it's time to tackle the challenge of managing horses with extreme temperaments, whether they're overly spirited or a bit too laid back. For the high-spirited horse, think of its energy as akin to a person's quick temper. Avoiding irritation is key. From the moment you mount, make it as smooth and gentle an experience as possible. Once you're up, don't rush into things. Start slow, ease into a faster pace gradually, so the horse doesn't even realize it's picking up speed. Abrupt commands can confuse and startle a spirited horse, much like a sudden noise might startle a person. If you need to slow down a horse that's gotten too eager, don't yank or pull abruptly. Calmly and gently guide them to a slower pace. Long, steady runs are your friend here, soothing the horse more than quick, repeated sprints ever could. Trying to tire out a spirited horse with fast gallops might backfire, as they might try to outdo you with sheer willpower, potentially causing trouble for both of you. A spirited horse tends to love competition, so racing against another horse might not be the best idea, as it can encourage their competitive nature even further. When it comes to bits, go for something smooth over rough. If you must use a rough bit, handle it as gently as possible. Riders on spirited horses should keep their movements minimal and avoid unnecessary touches, sticking only to what helps maintain a stable seat. Interestingly, the conventional sounds we use to calm or encourage horses, like chirrups and clucks, can actually be reversed in their associations if we're consistent from the start. So, a calming action paired with a cluck and an encouraging action paired with a chirrup can teach the horse to respond oppositely to the usual. During tense moments, like battle sounds, try to keep your approach calm to avoid spooking your horse. Ideally, take those moments to rest or feed them if you can. But really, the best piece of advice might be to avoid overly spirited horses for war in the first place. For the sluggish horse, simply flip the script, employ the opposite strategies to those used for the spirited ones. So you've got a horse ready for war, but what if you're aiming for something more? Maybe you're looking for that showstopper, a horse with grace and power. If that's the case, forget yanking on the bit or overdoing it with spurs and whips. Those approaches often backfire, making the horse more about avoiding discomfort than showing off its natural elegance. Instead, you want a horse that prances with pride, just like it would when strutting around other horses, head high and neck arched, full of life. Getting your horse to this level of showiness isn't about harsh commands or physical force. Start by using different types of bits, a smooth one for comfort and a rougher one for training, so the horse learns to appreciate the gentle touch. And remember, flexibility in the bit helps a lot. A stiff bit is no good, as it's all or nothing, but a flexible one allows for subtler control. When you're riding, it's all about balance. Don't be too harsh or too soft with the reins. Encourage your horse to raise its neck and arch gracefully by easing off the bit as soon as it responds correctly. Reward good behavior immediately. It's the key to making training enjoyable for the horse. A horse naturally loves to move fast. It's in their spirit. Watch a horse given its freedom. It'll choose a trot or a gallop over a walk any day. So, training should tap into that joy, not turn it into a chore. Pushing too hard takes the fun out of it for both of you. When your horse gets really good at riding, especially after mastering how to start cantering with just a nudge, you'll see something awesome. If you gently pull back on the bit while signalling him to go, he might get a bit frustrated at first, but then, when you let him loose, he'll burst forward, full of energy and pride. It's like he's showing off, moving with a majestic kind of grace, as if he's strutting around other horses. People watching can't help but admire him. They'll say things like, "Look at that magnificent horse, so eager with such smooth moves and high spirits. He carries himself like he owns the place. That mix of elegance and power is breathtaking." Achieving this level of performance means practicing the fine balance between discipline and reward. It turns your horse into not just a creature of power, but also of breathtaking beauty, the kind that captures the heart of every onlooker with its spirited grace and commanding presence. This approach isn't just about making your horse look good, it's about respecting and enhancing its natural instincts and joy in movement. If you're dreaming of a horse that not only performs well in battle, but also turns heads in a parade, you're looking for a special kind of horse. Not every horse can strut with that extra flair. You need one with spirit and a powerful build. But having just flexible legs isn't enough. What you really want is a horse with a strong and supple back, not the part near the tail, but the area from the ribs to the thighs. That's the kind of horse that can tuck its hind legs under and lift its front, showing off its belly in full glory. When he does that, ease up on the reins to let him show off those moves he's naturally proud of. Some folks try different tricks to get these results, like prodding the horse under its legs or having someone run alongside with a stick. But honestly, the best way to teach is through positive reinforcement. Let your horse know that following your lead means easier times and breaks. Simon once said that forcing a horse into these actions makes them clumsy, not graceful. The goal is to have a horse that naturally struts its stuff on your cue. For example, work him into a gallop in the training field until he's sweaty, then when he starts prancing beautifully, that's your cue to cool down and give him a break. Horses that prance like that are the ones you see in sculptures of gods and heroes, and handling one gracefully can make anyone look majestic. Now, if you're leading a squad or a whole cavalry unit, don't just focus on your own shine, make sure the whole group looks impressive. If your horse is all about the high steps without moving forward, the whole parade slows to a crawl. And that's hardly a spectacle. But if you set a pace that shows off everyone's best, spirit, elegance, and readiness for action, the collective power will make the whole squad a sight to behold. Lastly, if you're smart about buying and training your horses, not only for battle but for show, and you manage them well, even in the heat of battle, you're not just improving their value, you're on your way to building a renowned stable and making a name for yourself in horsemanship. Assuming nothing unpredictable gets in the way, there's no reason you can't achieve legendary status in the equestrian world. Finally, let's talk about battle on horseback. It's not just about having a horse that's ready, you also need the right armor for both of you. First off, your body armor has to fit perfectly. If it's too big, it's all hanging on your shoulders, too tight, and you might as well be in a straitjacket. Plus, your neck is the most critical area and needs proper protection. A piece attached to the armour fitting snugly not only guards this vital spot, but can also be quite decorative. If designed correctly, it can even cover your face up to the nose, giving the option to hide your identity if you wish. About helmets, those Boeotian styles are top-notch. They cover everything important without hindering your line of sight. And the armour, it should let you move. Sit, stand, whatever you need to do. Don't forget about flaps around your midsection for extra protection without sacrificing flexibility. Your left arm, the one holding the reins, is critical, so protect it well. There's this new thing called a gauntlet that's perfect. It covers your shoulder, down to your hand, moves with you, and protects those vulnerable spots. Your right arm, though, needs freedom to throw javelins or landing hard blows, so the armor here should be about mobility without leaving you exposed. Don't let your horse be unarmored either. Headgear, a chest plate, and even thigh pieces aren't just for show. They can double as protection for you too. The most important part is the horse's belly. Get some sturdy saddle cloths that protect without irritating the skin or making your horse miserable. For the rest of the gear, think practical. Leather gaiters can protect the lower legs and double as footwear. That's your basic setup for defence. For offence, swap out the traditional sword for a sabre. Its curved edge packs more punch from horseback. And instead of one unwieldy spear, carry two sturdy darts made from Cornell wood. They're easier to manage. You can throw one while keeping the other ready, and they're just more practical all around. When it comes to throwing those darts, think long range. The further you can throw, the more time you have to get ready for your next move. The trick to a powerful throw is in the stance and the release. Lean back, then forward, and let it fly with a bit of an upward angle for a perfect combination of strength, distance, and accuracy. This wraps up my personal tips and tricks for the horse-bound warrior. For those of you stepping up as squadron leaders or cavalry commanders, there's a whole other guide for that. Stay tuned, stay armoured, and stay ready. As we wrap up our journey back in time to the days of Xenophon, I hope you've enjoyed this exploration into ancient horsemanship and its surprisingly modern relevance. If you found yourself intrigued or inspired by today's journey, or if there's a particular slice of history you're eager to explore with us, we invite you to share your thoughts and ideas in the comments. Every story we share is a thread in the rich tapestry of our past, and your insights help us weave these narratives together. If you wish to journey further and deeper into the annals of history, your support on Patreon ensures that the past remains alive and vibrant. Find the link in the description and consider joining our community of history enthusiasts. Together, we can continue to unearth and celebrate the wisdom that has traversed time to reach us. Thank you for being part of today's expedition. Until next time, keep the curiosity of the past alive in your heart, and who knows what ancient wisdom will uncover next. If you liked this video, you should watch one of these next.